Welcome back to the Florida History Podcast. I'm Carter Krishnire.
And I'm Robert Bucciolato.
So the Florida of the 1970s and 1980s, as we talked about last week, was in a golden age. Not just a golden age of politics, but a golden age of forward-looking innovation, a growing tech hub, a place with lots of foreign commerce, a forward-looking futuristic place anchored by Disney and the space program and by the sort of commercial industries you had in the southeast portion of the state. Add to that a growing film industry and more television shows being based around Florida. Miami Vice was big in the 1980s. The Golden Girls was big in the 1980s. And others. And you had movies that were being filmed in Florida. Absence of Malice is a movie I watched recently. Paul Newman movie with Sally Field and other stars in that movie. And it was, in fact, kind of the rebuttal to All the President's Men about journalists and about newspapers. That film entirely takes place in Miami. So what's more logical than marrying Disney, a media company, a company known for its films, a company that has anchored itself in the central part of the state of Florida, and film and television in this golden age in Florida?
So at this time, you see a different trajectory for both the Disney Company and for the Sunshine State. The Sunshine State is going through a golden age. And while that is taking place, Disney is going through its dark age. This is the period of time that is known as the Disney Dark Age of the 1980s, the early 1980s. In short, this was the era where Disney was almost sold and by a conglomerate and chopped up into parts. This was the era in which Disney released a $40 million animated film called The Black Cauldron, and it lost at the box office to the Care Bears movie. This is a terrible time to be Walt Disney World. Now, by now, Disney has gone and they've separated their theme park industry from their television and from their film industry. So it's no longer just, you know, Walt and Roy, saying, okay, well, what are we going to do? We're going to do this. We're going to do that. Okay, put in the folder. You know, it's a bunch of different presidents and vice presidents. And it's all led by the CEO, who is Ron Miller, who is the son-in-law of Disney. And so he decides that Disney needs to get away from the corn. They need to get dark. And so he starts making more dark, more mature films, more sci-fi, you know, movies that, you know, the villain dies, sometimes gruesome at the end, horror films. They create Touchstone, which allows, you know, Oscar-winning directors to make films not under the Disney banner, but still made by Disney, you know, that people curse and things of that nature. And you're starting to see that it's going okay, but they still got a long way to go. Essentially, all of the entertainment industry, all the entertainment tools in the company have sort of been in a deep freeze since Walt died. They're still kind of making movies for a 1962 audience in 1980. So, you know, I mean, people aren't really interested in that kind of thing anymore. And they've had to kind of, you know, work hard to sort of modernize. The only thing that's really working for the company is actually the theme parks. The theme parks are doing very, very well. Disney decides that they're going to go ahead and they're actually going to go into two different industries that are very, very popular in Florida, and that is VHS industry, and they're going to go into the cable industry. both of which are huge industries nationwide. People are becoming millionaires off of it, and it is something that has a lot of power monetarily for the Sunshine State. There's a lot of different video companies here. There's a lot of video distributors, video manufacturers, and there's a lot of different cable companies. So what you see is, you see a Disney in turmoil, and you see a state government that is trying as hard as it can to make the Treasure Coast the second Silicon Valley, the East Coast Silicon Valley, which that's something that they were working.
And again, Robert, I have to stress this. The PC, which revolutionized the world, more than just computing, it revolutionized the world, was invented not in Silicon Valley, but in Boca Raton. This was a genuine tech hub in that period. And this was a huge source of pride for both the state and for Governor Graham, who made it a priority.
So they were trying to make that part a new telecommunication hub, but they were also looking at South Florida and potentially Central Florida to be a place where there would be a lot more filmmaking. They made a big deal whenever Burt Reynolds filmed in Florida because, you know, he had his own production company. You know, there was something that they were really, really pitching on. Well, at this time, Ron Miller is forced out. There's a greenback scheme that saves Disney from going under, but they basically have to pay off a very rich man by the name of Stanley Gold to basically go away and not buy them. And then they bring in two executives from Paramount Pictures, one of which is Michael Eisner. Now, Michael Eisner decides that he is going to take over the company. He's going to be CEO. And the first thing that he decides is they're going to do three things. They're going to really double down on animation. Instead of animating one film every 3 years and releasing it, they're going to try and do one animated film each year. They're also going to do more television, more cable television, and hopefully do it cheaply. As anybody that has seen or read or watched documentary about 1980s and 1990s cable television, there was a lot of it. It was very, very cheap, and most of it was done outside of a union.
Yes.
So you put two and two together, and they say, oh, well, you know, why not Florida? And the other thing that they were going to do was they were going to modernize and continually build on the two parks, but he also wanted a third gate. He wanted a third theme park. And basically what he said was, it's either going to be something that can compete with SeaWorld, because SeaWorld was getting ready to build on in Central Florida. Or he told them about a meeting that he had when he was one of the heads of Paramount with Universal, where Universal said, hey, you know, we got this theme park in California. We're thinking about doing it on the East Coast, but we don't want to spend the money. Why don't we, you guys, Paramount and us, why don't we go 50-50 and we can use your library, we can use our library, and we'll have a big park that can compete with Disney. Disney's going through a hard time right now. Their movies aren't doing too good. They're basically on life support with the theme park. We could really do this, and we'll be in a better position to be successful than we would, you know, maybe 10, 15 years from now if Disney is on the up and up. Well, Eisner turned him down cold-hearted, and he was like, no, this is a stupid idea. But as soon as he went to Disney, he said, hey, so that meeting happened. Let's do that. And Disney was like, okay, well, you know, we're Disney, and we basically made Mary Poppins. And other than that, a bunch of kid films that nobody's interested in, nobody's ever heard of. So we like your idea, but you're going to want to talk to a different company. Now, this is where it gets a little bit murky, because Michael Eisner is really the only one still around that talks about these events. And so the rumor is that Paramount was approached and they threatened litigation and told them to go away. But at the same time, another company was approached, and it was a company that was actually doing even worse than Disney at the time, and that was MGM. Now, I mentioned earlier that Disney had to essentially pay greenmail, which is where you pay somebody head over fist money to go away, kind of the equivalent of blackmail. Well, at the same time, MGM had that problem, and MGM was not able to pay, so they folded, and they were sold to essentially a real estate company. And so they were really no longer a movie studio. They made a few movies every year, but for the most part, they were sold for parts. And Ted Turner bought them up, got the library, yada, yada, yada. So anyway, they had all of this film, all of these different films just sort of sitting there, not being used. And Disney approached them and was like, hey, we're Disney, we'll give you money. You give us all of your old Hollywood stuff and all of your more mature stuff, and we'll throw in Mickey Mouse and all of our animation, and we'll make a theme park together. And that became the genesis of what was their third attraction, which was going to be MGM Studios. Now, where the state of Florida gets involved is they're looking for a place that will film more television, more films in Florida, an actual working studio. Well, they go to the Secretary of Commerce, who's also Lieutenant Governor Wayne Mixon, and they're like, this is the idea. And he is totally on board, because at this time, Florida is the third state with the most television production and film production in the country.
Yeah, at the time, I should mention, we had the Golden Girls also. I forgot to mention that, right? That's actually even bigger than Miami Vice. That's based in Southern Florida as well. So not far from where you grew up, actually, in Hollywood. Yeah. Also, one other point I want to throw in and then continue, Robert. Michael Eisner is the first person to lead Disney that's not from the immediate family or had not been a long-term Disney employee. So Card Walker, we talked about in the last episode, he had been with Walt Disney since the early 1930s, I believe.
And, he also, full disclosure, he also has a soccer team.
Yes.
In England.
Yeah, Portsmouth FC, which I cover. So full disclosure, I cover Pompey and know a number of Pompey fans, and he's done a great job. He's just good at business. And we'll probably talk more about the Disney Renaissance in a broader sense in the next episode, but continue with Eisner and MGM.
But he's not a bad guy, but he can be a little unscrupulous.
Yes.
And if there's ever, we'll just leave it here. This instance is the worst episode of his very illustrious career. Because he basically stole a company from a concept from two different studios. And this actually became something that would plague Disney and film production in the Sunshine State to come, was the fact that they were building a theme park that for... on paper just seemed like just such a slam dunk. I mean, even as I'm mentioning this, I mean, it just seems like such a great idea. It's a good idea for Disney. It's a great idea for MGM. It's a great idea for Florida. Everybody wins, except nobody wins.
Yep.
Because what happens is Disney realizes very quickly, oh my God, we have no real themes for this park. They think, oh my God, I mean, there's nothing that we can use I mean, everything that we've ever come up with, every film, every television idea, all they're all in the other parks. And so they realize they're going to have to use a lot of MGM. So when it first opened, you know, they said, you know, Disney MGM Studios, but really this was a very MGM concentrated, you know, thing. I mean, you know, there was the Great Movie Ride. There was all of these things that were, it was very much built around the symbols and the films of the 1930s and 40s and 50s. At the same time, Florida is a right-to-work state. It's not a very big union state. That works well for a lot of industries. But as we have seen this year, that does not work very well for production.
Right.
You know, film and television. So Disney was, you know, building studio space. Disney was going to be filming more things at the Disney studio, more, you know, commercials and things like that for Disney, you know, and their idea of maybe doing a few different TV shows. But it wasn't going to produce the kind of, you know, renaissance that the Sunshine State was envisioning, because as it turns out, nobody of power, of importance, was going to want to go from a very pro-union, high-paying state like California or New York to Florida. So it was very, very hard to find talent, let alone very hard to find people that were going to want to come and stay, you know, a year or two or half a year to film an entire, you know, television series in the Sunshine State. That's one of the reasons why, you know, a decade later, Universal Studios didn't pan out. It was the same thing. It all boiled down to the fact that there was a sort of dislike or a distrust from the industry over the union practices of the Sunshine.
So, worth noting in this moment that MGM was bought by Ted Turner and then flipped. Kurt Kerkorian, who had invested in MGM in the late 60s, then I think bought the company back in the late 90s from Ted Turner. But the legacy of Turner buying MGM for a short period and then flipping most of it is that he kept the pre-1970 MGM library, something like that, which gave him the basis to begin a channel called TCM, Turner Classic Movies, which is one of my favorite channels on television. So, and then obviously eventually Warner Brothers buys Turner. So you have the entire library of Warner movies, some of the great Humphrey Bogart movies on TCM. And that's why the Turner channels always had the Bugs Bunny cartoons, the Looney Tunes cartoons, because Warner Brothers eventually bought Turner and then now have merged with Discovery, right? So it's Warner Brothers Discovery. But that's MGM was being traded around like a commodity at that point. It was no longer the robust film studio it had been. And to the point, though, Florida needed a film presence, and it just doesn't quite work out the way it had been hoped. And in fact, in time, Jeb Bush and the legislature decide to take away the film credit. We've talked about this on past episodes, so I don't want to rehash it too much. And to don't want to get too deep into current politics, but Ron DeSantis and the current legislature realize, oh my goodness, this was a mistake that our predecessors made 25 years ago. And you have things that are not being filmed in Florida anymore, even if it's about Florida. There was a recent film about Meyer Lansky, which the entire film takes place in between Miami Beach and Hallandale, yet you can tell from the scenery, the entire thing is filmed on the West Coast of the U.S., in California, Southern California. Steven Spielberg's movie that I watched again recently, Catch Me If You Can, which is about Abagnale, a fake Pan Am pilot. Much of that film takes place in Miami. The scenes that were Miami were all filmed in Southern California. So that's kind of where we're at right now with film in the state.
You even have a situation where you have a lot of different productions that are supposed to take place in the Everglades or all throughout Florida and are instead being filmed in either the Carolinas or more often now, Georgia.
Yes, the Everglades scenes in a lot of these films are being filmed in the Okefenokee Swamp, which is really insulting, really. I mean, because, you know, they're just crossing the border and filming it, basically. So Disney, we'll just wrap up on this, Robert. Disney, Eisner had a vision. The state wanted to attract more film business. The park opens in June of 1989 and is, I have to say, and during my high school years, was seen as a bit of a joke. Like, why would your parents pay the same price to go to MGM when you could go to Epcot or Magic Kingdom for the same? We got Florida rates in those days, Florida rates. And basically, my friends and I, none of us went to that park. You know, we would go for three. If we went to Disney for 3 days, it would be, okay, let's do a day at the Magic Kingdom, 2 days at Epcot, or vice versa. You never, even if you were doing 3 days, you never built the third park into your visit. And that was something that plagued Disney for a long time, that park. And the numbers eventually picked up, but and that's something for another episode. But opening day and the opening couple years there were pretty disastrous, pretty barren.
It's an afternoon park is kind of the saying. And it also ended with the fact that they had to rely a lot on MGM, and it resulted in MGM suing Disney, which was not a good look. And ultimately, it was successful in the long run because they were able to form a partnership with Turner, and they were also able to survive based on the much-needed contributions and partnership with Lucasfilm, which resulted in Star Tours and, you know, the Indiana ride, which kind of, I guess, gave people a reason to come there. But, yeah, it wasn't a good way to cap either the Golden Age or Disney's 1980s.
Yeah, and the last point was there was a real curiosity. We're in high school. I was in high school at the time, or started high school right after it opened. And I, my friends and I thought, okay, if this thing is actually a working film studio where lots of things are being filmed, that's cool. We don't need rides or any of that sort of stuff. If it's an actual studio and tons of stuff is being filmed and we can see things that we then see in movies or on television shows. But it didn't work out that way either. There were a handful of things filmed there, but not very much, quite honestly. And that was, it was a bad capstone on the Golden Age. That's a great way to put it, Robert. Anyway, we will be back next week, and we're going to pick up with this, talking about, you teased it already, Universal Studios. And they opened in 1989 as well.